Chapter 13. The Ex-Priest.
"War is always an excuse for the monstrous," Aurea tells me. "We've climbed high enough, we can't see the raiders' torches any more. The light filtering through the fog on the headland is weak, but rising." "Anyone who kills Angari is doing Orholam's work," I say.
"Darjan, all are his children, even the disobedient, and what you're planning is forbidden," Aurea says.
Her dark curls are matted with blood, her face blanched from its usual mahogany, from the bad light, I hope, but not from blood loss. I know it isn't fear. Aurea has never been afraid in her life. There are 100 good reasons why I should listen to her. Caris Shadowblinder herself, Lucidonius's own widow and heir, put Aurea over me in our training. She's older than me, wiser too. But I'm stronger. "I hate waiting for the light," I say. "I have a pair of Lucidonius's marvellous spectacles, crafted by his own hand. Since he's passed, you'd think they're holy relics with how everyone treats them. Well made, though, anyone would admit, and utterly revolutionary. It hadn't been that no one had thought of melting metal ores into molten glass for their colour. It was that they couldn't get the fires hot enough, couldn't get the ores pure enough. Lucidonius had solved that, too, showing himself to be a mundane genius as well as a magical one. He'd been infuriating that way, but those lenses had changed everything for drafters everywhere. A lens grinder, their mighty Lucidonius, in addition to everything else, changing our lives in a thousand ways, drawing us along behind him like leaves in a gale, and leaving a terrible mess when the storm passed.
As pride is the first sin, so power is the first temptation, I intone. Lucidonius preached that, and became powerful, more powerful than the pagan priests and prophets. Pagan priests like me, I began drafting. I was a captain of the Ahadar Assis Gwarjan. Lucidonius's words had somehow changed my heart, but I still wonder if they ever changed my mind. Or maybe it was the other way around. His words were enough to make me give up my comfort, my position, my place, my prestige. But now as I look down toward my new home, where doubtless the streets run red with the blood of my new neighbours and only friends, I think, perhaps, Orholam didn't change me enough. "Every colour is from Orholam," Lucidonius had said, holding a prism above his head as he preached peace and brotherhood between colours and countries. It had made sense to many, but perhaps especially to those like me, who can draw more than one colour. In my land, my mastery of green had always been praised, but my use of blue condemned by my brother Assassin, even though it made me a better Gwarjan. Maybe none of it made sense. Maybe Lucidonius was merely more right than those who'd come before him. Maybe what I'm about to do isn't a sin against Orholam, that odd desert god who lives in the sky and everywhere, invisibly, rather than walking the earth like a proper god. Maybe it is. He'll have to forgive me, for though I am no longer an Ahadar Assis Gwarjan, I cannot stop being a Gwarjan. It is I who am, who Orholam made me, if Lucidonius spake true. I draw on the light, and my green Jinaya is there, familiar to me as my dead wives' faces, my beloved wives, forced into the orgiast's flames to expiate the shame and crime of my apostasy. "I've missed you," Eshma whispers along my skin, her touch caresses. "I've missed her too. Of course I have, but she knows that. I expect her to be angry, haughty, to punish me for turning my back on her, but she's more canny than that. First she'll get her hooks into me, later she'll punish. Nor does she go to my libido, once so potent, now seemingly dead since my Anaya Anciana burned. Instead she waits,
Perhaps she sees from my face that the only pleasure I seek is the pleasure of battle, of red vengeance. Perhaps even after all this time she feels me directly. "I would have made you the next Adarat," she says, mournfully. She puts her hand on my wrist as I start to pour Luxin forth from my skin there. "You were to be a god." "The demon's in your eyes," Aurea says. "Do you see her true, or do you see how she wants you to see?" I remember when Lucidonius bent the prism toward me as my Janiya stood in front of my eyes shouting blasphemies in my ears. The sudden wash of other colors had shown me what the priests of the other colors saw when they looked at her. In every other color, Eshma was a horror. No wonder the other Assassin Colori warred with us, called us demon worshippers. And then Lucidonius had flipped a mirror out, and in that full-spectrum light I'd seen that even the green was a thin mask. Eshma was no beauty. She was all disease and ugliness. I'd shattered the prism, shattered the mirror, swearing Lucidonius had ensorcelled it, that he'd tricked me, shown me lies, but I was wrong. Later I'd done the same trick when I found other djinn foolish enough to manifest themselves in their priests' eyes. The prism we used was a mundane prism, the mirror plain silver and glass. Eventually the 200 had learned that we could expose them. They came up with elaborate lies to those they snared to explain why they no longer would appear at all. Blamed it on the stain Lucidonius had brought to the world. Truth was, they didn't want to be so easily unmasked. Eshma says nothing more. I know she was one of the foremost of the 200. Nearly one of the nine. A new Adarat is not born solely of one man's conquering all human contenders. His partner Janiya must conquer all of her rivals as well. The armor wraps around my body. I hold open only points at each joint. It's not as efficient or flexible or reactive as how I had once done it, with every pore, every sweat gland, every hair a point of contact. Back then I'd let my Janiya control the armor, shifting it, reacting to dangers I couldn't even see. Her immortal will complementing my mortal will. The two of us had been one in a way I couldn't share even with my wives. I draw on blue, looking above the frames of my green spectacles at the lightning sky. Blue is safe, for me. I never bound my will to blues. To me it is only a tool, albeit one that cools my passions. My Janiya would never let me draft much blue. She was too jealous. I thought it was simply her nature, but now I see that she needed me all to herself if she was to win her fights with the other djinn. An Adarat who was not a pure green? Impossible. As pride is the first sin, so power is the first temptation. Funny how Lucidonius put that in the present tense, though telling a creation story. Not pride was the first sin. It made the thing applicable to us as much as to the first light. Good trick. "My heart is yours, Darjan, but I cannot save you if you don't let me help," Eshma says. Her voice is so like my dead Anaya's that I know she's stolen even that. Clever, clever wench. "You can't listen to what she says, Darjan," Aurea says, in the mundane world, voice weakening. "You know she lies." "I know." "Show me I can trust you," I say aloud. I hope Aurea thinks I'm speaking to her. I hope my Janiya thinks I'm speaking to her. The light is good now. I start running toward the village. Another color might sneak in, hoping to find the raiders asleep, exhausted from a long night of murder and worse. That isn't the way of green. My Janiya sings battle rage and bloodlust, and I know that she knows me too well. Rage is not only reds. I draft enough blue to make sharp edges for the thorn swords that sprout from my hands. My legs are sheathed in Luxin, protecting my knees, adding springiness to each step. Adding the power of my will to my movement, allowing me to jump farther than any mortal, to land safely, to run faster than a charging grizzly. I am become a beast. I see the dead. A young woman, Lucia Martenus,
lying on her side with her head cracked like an egg, her baby swollen belly run through half a dozen times. Her younger sister is dead, cut down closer to town. They'd tried to escape together. Rui Garros lies facing town, his pitchfork lying in the sticky pool of his blood. Perhaps he'd tried to cover Lucia's escape. He'd always loved that girl, though she'd married the town drunk instead. Usually the Angari raiders treated the people of Atan's town like a crop. Weed out the men who can fight, cut off the thumb of the right hand of the young men so they can still work, still breed, and take the prettiest women for slaves and concubines. Then the Angari would come back years later, long enough that the people could have built up a little wealth, but not long enough that they could build up enough strength to give the raiders much trouble. Of course, the raiders killed those who irritated them, too. Sometimes they killed for sport, sometimes they maimed for fun. But this was something else. This was pure punishment, a massacre. Everyone is dead. I see little Gonzalo, the farrier's simpleton son. He'd been impaled on a pike, sodomized, the point of the pike sticking out of his gaping mouth up at the sky. I howl, waking the whole goddamn camp, and my Eshma comes back over me, putrid and beautiful, a diseased whore. She is as ugly as what I planned to do, and my soul is a small price to pay for vengeance. It makes me monstrous. I am become a beast. I am become a god. Vengeance is mine.